the ABC's Word Wizard, the Lord of Language. A word in your ear with Professor Rolly Sussex.
Yes, it's that time of day. The ABC's Word Wizard, Rolly Sussex, OAM, Emeritus Professor from the School of Languages and Cultures at the University of Queensland, is here willing and able to talk to you about words, language and linguistics. 1-300-222-612 is the number you can call. That's 1-300-222-612. Rolly, good afternoon. Welcome to the new studio.
A brand spanking beautiful. It's very nice, actually.
I wonder, does it have a new studio smell?
Yes, it does. Yes. New paint, new equipment, new technology. That just slight little touch of, wow, here we go again.
Fancy pants.
Because I've been here nearly 25 years, mm-hmm. and I remember some very, very old studios in the old building in Corra Drive.
Well, the last studio we were in, every time I'd press a button, a part of it would flick off. So no unidentified flying objects in this
the
studio.
The incredible exploding panel.
Indeed. We have some questions coming in, and thank you. Call now if you would like to put a question to Rolly about language. 1-300-222-612. We'll come to Eugenie in Perth shortly. But we've been taking questions from our school students in Queensland as well, Rolly, and often their questions they blow my tiny little mind and really make you think about language.
Yeah.
And there was a question from Wesley mm-hmm. at Durack State School, which is the school we're visiting this afternoon, that really got me thinking. This is what Wesley would like to know.
Hello, my name is Wesley from Durack State School. My question for today is, does English have more words than any other language?
Great question, Wesley.
And the answer is almost certainly, but no one is absolutely sure, because English is spoken in so many different places and there are so many local words which are used in English in India, English in China, English in Washington, New Zealand and so on, so that it's actually really impossible to say. But the Webster's Dictionary in America has about 500,000 English words in it. That's a pretty big dictionary. Mm. But the best guess is that that's possibly less than half. Because when you add all of the technical words, because English is used as the language of technology and science and, say, medicine around the world, plus all the local dialect words in different parts of the world, plus the way the kids using English, they're inventing new things all the time. It gets bigger and bigger and bigger. For example, there's one of my favorite words from India is prepone. And now there's postpone, if you put something off. Prepone is if you bring it earlier. All right. Now that's very logical. It's using all the bits of English in exactly the right way. They've invented a new word. We haven't taken it up here, but I think we should, because it fills a rather important gap.
Well, if it's a man to do it, it's you, Rolly.
All right.
So with Winston Churchill's vocabulary estimated at 60,000 words, is that above, below, average? What's that regarded
it's
as?
Above.
If there's 500,000 or so words in the dictionary.
Yes. 500,000 is the maximum of all the words that they've been able to gather.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a difference between your active vocabulary and your passive.
Right? I see.
Now, you'd recognize a lot more words than you'd use. So your active vocabulary is always smaller than your passive. Okay. And your passive has got a kind of gray area on the edge, words which you think you know and you might be able to remember if you think about it. So that's a bit uncertain. But Churchill was a really good creative, sometimes aggressive user of the language. He used his words with great care and impact. And in fact, he used to sit in the cab on his way to the House of Commons, running through and saying his speeches, running through them to see if they ran properly off the tongue, to make sure they were all right. So his vocabulary, I would have thought the active vocabulary would probably be around 60,000.
Mm-hmm.
He was a great user of complicated language.
I mean, how do you get to that figure? Would you have a figure for your vocabulary? How does one arrive at the point where they can describe the number of words in their active vocabulary?
Okay. People have done tests and experiments, and David Crystal is a linguist in England, has done several tests like this. And there were some guesses that, a person who hadn't had too much education might have a vocabulary of 6,000. And he thought that was way too small and did some tests, and he found that was way too small. And that 50 would be a reasonable number of passive vocabulary mm-hmm, mm-hmm. for educated people. So obviously the more challenges you've got, the more context you're in, the more different sorts of words you have to use, the more you're going to have to accumulate words. I don't know what my vocabulary is, because it's mixed up with Russian and French and Latin and Polish
bonus
and
points,
German
then.
And So there's not much room. I'm trying to learn Chinese at the moment, and there's not much room for new words.
I don't know how you do it. Professor Rolly Sussex on ABC Radio Brisbane in Queensland, 1-300-222-612 is the phone number you can call if you've got a question about language for Rolly. 1-300-222-612. More from our students in Durack in a moment. But to WA right now, Jeannie in Perth. Hello, what would you like to know?
Yes, hi. I just discovered you on podcasts.
Oh, lovely. Good. Go ahead.
And we don't have a program like this over here. I wish we did.
I have in the past done some programs with ABC Perth, but only bits and pieces here and there. Anyway, what's your question?
Well, it's just I have a friend who, when she texts me, often says, better than.
Oh.
Not better than.
Yes. Okay, this is a problem of pronunciation, and it's more common on the east coast of Australia than elsewhere, certainly not in South Australia. And people tend to say Alexander rather than Alexander. Okay, there are words where the at vowel has become an air, and than is starting to be pronounced then by some people, particularly if it's not stressed. You know, this is more than I expected, more than. Now, that sounds either T-H-A-N or T-H-E-N. It could be either. And if it's unstressed, it's got this vowel called schwa, S-C-H-W-A, which is the unstressed vowel. And unless you've actually done some reading and been taught these things, you may not know whether it's a T-H-A-N or a T-H-E-N, and that's why.
Okay. So then is comparing something, and then is a measurement of time usually, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Jeannie. To Scarborough now, and Ron. G'day, Ron.
Good afternoon.
What would you like to know?
I'd like to know why. I'm 91.
Yep.
And I was brought up to go to the toilet.
Mm-hmm.
Now people, when I ask people, look at me funny. They say, oh, you mean the bathroom?
Mm-hmm.
Why we change toilet to bathroom?
Okay. The trouble with that particular part of the house is that it's always been subject to taboos. You know, you go there to do things that people don't like to talk about. And so there are well over 100 different words for the loo. And the loo is one that came into use about 30-something years ago, I suppose. I'm going to wash my hands. It's the littlest room in the house. I'm going to see a man about a horse. Toilet is an old French word which we borrowed. And actually, to do your toilette in French means to kind of spruce yourself up, do your hair, do your teeth, get dressed properly, and so on. And bathroom, often in the bathroom, you don't go to have a bath at all. You might go to the loo or wash your hands or do your teeth or something. So these are called euphemisms, E-U-P-H, euphemisms, and they're all nice ways of saying a word that you don't want to utter. And so whatever the word is you're not saying, right, toilet has given way to bathroom, which actually is an Americanism.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Bathroom.
Bathroom, yes.
I mean, there's no bath in the lav half the time anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's odd that it would be bathroom.
That's right.
I know I use the term bathroom all the time. Mm-hmm. For some reason, I always feel like toilet sounds
toilet
rude. But I know it's not, but that's just not, where my brain goes.
Yeah, yeah. And when I was growing up, toilet was regarded as being the modest way of referring to it. My bathroom came in later. But, of course, the washroom is also used.
Okay, well, there's
another
usually
washing
a sink.
Thing going on in the washroom, you know.
So if a toilet was the polite reference to the room where one would take care of one's business,
yes.
Then what was the less polite description of it?
Oh, I think toilet always. Well, what were the less polite ones? Brasco
before bathroom came along.
Yeah, before bathroom, Brasco.
Okay,
Dunny.
Okay,
right.
Thunderbox.
There are a whole lot of them. Now, Dunny is a British dialect word. It means a faeces house.
Oh, boy.
Dunnikin. And it's fallen out of use in England. We've kept it going, and there wouldn't be Dunnies around if it weren't for the Aussies. But then there was the long drop and various other, you know, the one-holer and thing out the back.
The throne.
Yes.
All right.
Lots and lots and lots.
So thank you very much, Ron at Scarborough on ABC Radio Brisbane and Queensland, 25 minutes past two. My name is Kat. Professor Rolly Sussex is with you, and you can call Rolly on 1-300-222-612. I wanted to take you back to the Year 6 class at Durack State School, Rolly, because Elma has a wonderful question for you.
My name is Elma from Durack State School, and my question is, what is the very last word officially added to the English language?
All right, this is another difficult one, because imagine you're in charge of keeping a dictionary up to date. Where do you get all the material from? And the answer is that any dictionary, particularly the big ones like the Oxford, they've got a team of people and they're always scanning newspapers and recent books and stuff on the internet and picking up words and checking to see whether they're just one-offs or whether they've actually achieved some kind of frequency and whether they're being understood by lots of people. In addition to that, there are people like me who are sending them things that we've heard or observed, saying, hey, are you aware that there's a new use out here? And so they pick those up and they do a bit of a check. And they don't immediately put things in the dictionary, but usually every 3 months or so, they put out a list of the ones they've recently added. And as you'd expect, some of the ones they've recently added are super spreader from COVID and long COVID, which are people who've got symptoms that go on and on and on when they're meant to get better, and vaccine passport, and those are probably going to become more useful. Then there's air fryer. Now, air fryers have been around quite a bit, but it's only just made it in the dictionary. And I think they were thinking this might just be a fly-by-night, you know, people will have it for a little bit and then fad and get rid of it, right? But there are other words that the Oxford recently added, like binge watch. And binge watch is when you sit down and you watch an entire series of something that you really want to watch on TV, one episode after the other, till you get to the end and drive everybody else nuts. Bling is there. Now, bling's been around for quite a bit. That sort of showy...
ostentatious jewellery.
Ostentatious jewellery. Mm-hmm. Geek fest. OMG for, oh my God, which is, again, a younger person's thing, I think. But also to unfriend someone. Now, that's made it into the dictionary.
Brutal.
The Oxford says this is now a recognised word. It's part of the language.
Doesn't make it okay. Yeah.
And vlog and woot.
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 Woot, woot. I'm a wooter.
So, every 3 months or so, the Oxford, if you get on the web and look for Oxford English Dictionary New Words, there will be a release and they'll say, these are the ones we reckon are now worth putting in the dictionary.
Wonderful question, Elmer. Thank you very much. More from Durack State School in a moment. But to Weeper now, where Nigel has a question for you, Rolly. G'day, Nigel.
Hey, how you going, guys?
Hey, good, mate.
Thank you. Excuse me?
Go ahead.
Now, I know there's this big geometric question, mathematical question.
Yep.
About squaring the circle.
Oh, yeah.
I was wondering if there was actually, a technical term, mathematical term for squaring the circle.
I think this is regarded as an idiom. In other words, it's a collection of words that hang around together, and they've got quite a special meaning. And what it means is you're trying to do the impossible. Because a circle never can be square, and so you can't square it. And so if you're trying to square the circle, you're doing something which is either impossible or apparently impossible. Now, maybe there is an answer, but it's really, really hard or far away. So there's no particular version about this, except that it's a sort of contradiction in terms. And because it's a contradiction, it means this is really, really tough to challenge for you.
Thank you very much, Nigel. To Paul at Forest Lake. G'day, Paul.
G'day.
What would you like to know?
The use of the word, the personal pronoun who and whom,
yes,
to my mind, is disappearing and being replaced with that. People, even newsreaders, are saying, this is the man that did this, rather than this is the man who did this. Is this now the trend, or
it's more than the trend?
It's poor education.
It's becoming accepted. First of all, the one of these three that's really on the skids is whom. I'm afraid, whom used to be the object or after a preposition. So, for whom the bell tolls, title of a novel by Ernest Hemingway, or whom did you see? But if you say whom did you see, that sounds almost too overcautious nowadays. And so people tend to say who did you see rather than whom, because whom is the only one that's got a special accusative form like that. And then there's the word that. Now, when I was at school, that was things and who was people. Nowadays, that has expanded to include people. And so the man that I saw, the man that's coming in the door, are now entirely accepted. They're relative pronouns and they're absolutely okay. And as a result, who is becoming a little less frequent than it used to be. And one of the reasons why it is, I think, is that people don't know when to say whom, and that gets them off the hook because it's always that.
Rather than getting it wrong, just don't use it at all.
So. I'll stop screaming at the TV then.
I think, yeah, well, by all means, scream. Sometimes you can achieve things like that, at least in terms of personal relief. But the word whom, if you listen out for whom, you'll find that it's only used by rather careful speakers in rather careful contexts. And it's one of these bits of English that I'm afraid is on the way out. I still try to remember to use it. I always write it when I should, but sometimes when I'm speaking, I don't.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you, Paul. On ABC Radio Brisbane and Queensland, it is about 2:30. My name is Kat. You are with Professor Rolling Sussex, taking your questions about language and linguistics. Ian is at Victoria Point with an excellent question by the sound of it. Ian, go ahead. Hello.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Okay.
Yeah.
I've noted with some frustration for some time the use of two absolutes together, often in the media, such as very shortly. My understanding was that was you didn't use two absolutes. But why does it shortly get classified as an absolute, whereas soon doesn't?
Absolutes are not much talked about in linguistics nowadays, and I think that shortly is just a time adverb, and so very shortly means very soon, and that's basically all it is.
Yeah.
Now, you're right that very often you do get two words which seem to be doing the same sort of work, each of them, and I've even heard most best recently. I think there's an ad that does this, and so people are actually breaking the rules in order to try and say something that's a bit striking and might actually stick in memory for that reason.
So Brechtian, Rolly.
So Brechtian, yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ian, thank you.
Thanks, Ian.
Joe's at Aspley. G'day, Joe. What would you like to know?
Oh, hello. My thing that's annoying me at the moment is the number of people who are saying is instead of are, like there is only 10 minutes till the game starts.
Ah, yes, yes, yes.
Which I mean, even TV journalists are saying it, and I first actually heard it on ABC Radio, so if anything you can do to change it.
The sky has fallen, yeah. Okay, you're quite right. The rule is that there is should be followed by a singular, and there are should be followed by a plural. But the trouble is that when you start a sentence with there is or there are, you're sometimes not sure whether it's going to be a singular or a plural when you get there. And so people by default are tending to say theirs, not so much there is, but theirs, and then, you know, whatever can follow. And we've had someone ask this before, and it, oddly enough, the same thing happens in German and in French. They say es gibt or il y a, and that's singular, and it doesn't matter whether there's a plural or singular following. They've just decided that we're going to break a rule and have this. It's a natural way to do it. So in English, I really do expect that there is plus a plural, sorry, Joe, is likely to become very standard very shortly. I try not to do it. And if you plan your sentences properly, you should be okay.
That's right, yes. Unfortunately, I think a lot of people are using it now because they might not know any better as such.
Possibly, or simply that they've heard a lot of people doing it, and the more it's actually heard, the more you'll think, oh, well, that's okay, I'll do it anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, good observation, Joe.
These things propagate around.
They do, don't they? Thank you very much, Joe at Aspley on ABC Radio Brisbane and Queensland. Returning to our Year 6 class at Durack State School now, Rolly, with a question from Angela.
My name is Angela. I'm a Year 6 student from Durack State School. My question is, are there any English words with no vowel in them?
Ah, good one. The answer is, the only ones that there are things like what are called initialisms, where you have letters. So RSVP, for example. Now, you might think there's no, you look at it and there's no vowels there, but in fact, when you say it, R, there's a vowel, S, there's a vowel E, V, there's a vowel E, and P, there's a vowel, okay? So we provide the vowels to make it understandable. Now, there are some languages which look as if they don't have vowels. In Russian or Czech, for example, the word for a wolf is, sorry, in Czech, the word for a wolf is VLK. And vlk, well, L is a perfectly good vowel in Czech. And in Czech, the word for a finger is PRST, which is prstsk.
Prst.
Prst. And prstskrskrk. Sorry. Prstskrskrk. Prstskrskrk is to push your finger through your throat.
Prstskrskrk.
Yeah, well, not bad.
That's very cool.
The question you need to ask, though, in English is, what about the letter Y? Because Y can be a vowel. If you have the letter Y after a consonant like B, Y, that's by, mm-hmm. you know, by the by, then that's it's an ordinary vowel. But if the letter Y occurs before a vowel, like yes, then it's a consonant. So in yes, Y is a consonant, and in by, Y is a vowel. So that you've got five vowels plus Y, and then all of the combinations of letters like AE or EA or OO or OU, and their vowels as well. And English, in fact, has got about 14 vowels all up. If you really want an interesting word which looks as if it's got no vowels, grab a pen. Syzygy.
Okay.
S-Y-Z-Y-G-Y. S-Y-Z-Y-G-Y. Syzygy. And it's a Greek word. It means the planets are all lined up, particularly the moon and the sun. And it's a thing you do when you're doing astronomy. And syzygy is a terrific word if you're doing Scrabble.
It is.
As you can see. If you want a word which language which looks as if it doesn't have vowels, then get on the web and look for Georgian. G-E-O-R-G-I-A-N. It's a language of the Caucasus. And they can have up to 6 to 8 consonants in a single cluster.
Wow.
So G-V-P-R-S, sorry, T-S-K-V-N-I, which is Gvprstkvini,
roughly. Wow.
Which means you peel us. Now, why you should want to say you peel us in Georgian, I don't know. But Gvprstkvini is, in fact, a word in Georgian, and you'll find that on the web as well.
Wonderful.
So English or vowels, you ought to have at least one
at
in
least,
an ordinary English.
Might include a Y. Thank you very much, Angela. To Proserpine now, and to you, Daniel, with a question about collective nouns. G'day.
Indeed. Good afternoon. Love your work. Hey, it's about collective nouns, like who exactly, like, makes up the name, like, murder of crows? I know I'd love to murder crows, etc., yes. But, you know.
Murder of crows and an exaltation of larks. There's a book by a man called James Lipton called An Exaltation of Larks, and he lists a huge number of these together with the lot that he's made up. We had a dinner for emeritus professors, these are aged professors at the university the other day, and we suggested that the collective noun should be a rumination of them. where did they come from? Very much in the Middle Ages, when knights went out hunting, you had to know if it was a brace of pheasant and this sort of thing. These were important words for talking about multiples of animals or birds that you shot, and it was part of the training of young knights that they should become competent in collective nouns. So they're actually quite old, and there aren't too many in use in English. You might say, how many head of cattle, for example. That's not one of the few that's in common use. Other than that, they're now a little bit more marginal. But if you happen to learn a language like Chinese, you can't say a number and then a noun like five hats. You have to say five and then what's called a measure word or a number word. Plus hats, you could have one in the middle. So some languages do it differently. So they are traditional. They've been around for a long time. If you get on the web and look for English collective noun history, you'll find a whole stack of them, and they're a lot of fun.
Thank you so much, Daniel. Great question. Our final call this afternoon comes from Holland Park West and Michael. Hello, Michael.
Hello. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. What would you like to know?
I was just going to reach back to your conversation about euphemisms and talking about the bathroom before, and I was confirming a word I heard a long time ago called a cacophemism, which I think is the opposite of a euphemism. Is that correct?
Right. The EU bit means nice or good or well in Greek, and the feme bit means sound, speaking. So this is good speaking. A cacophonism is a word, it's a very unusual word, which means something which sounds terrible. Right, but it doesn't say anything about the fact that a euphemism is a word which gives you a nice way of talking about something tricky or uncomfortable or which might be rude. So the proper opposite of a euphemism is a dysphemism, D-Y-S-phemism. And that means a word which is an unpleasant way of saying whatever it is you're talking about. So let's say someone dies. You might say that they've passed over or passed or gone to meet their maker or passed on or they're pushing up daisies. But in Australia, you can say they've carked it, and carked it is a dysphemism, right? And it's a disagreeable way of talking about something. And dysphemisms, there aren't as many as there are euphemisms, but they're interesting. because yes. they show that we actually are aware of being shocking deliberately, as opposed to beating about the bush.
Yeah, the example I was given was exactly that, passed away versus kick the bucket. And I was told that yes. kick the bucket was a cacophonism, but it's a dysphemism, is that right?
Well, kick the bucket doesn't sound very nice, but cacophonism is really something which has a disagreeable noise, all right? Cacophony is sounds being disagreeable, whereas the real core idea of euphemism is something which gives you a word which expresses a difficult idea in a polite way. And a dysphemism Wonderful. Is a word which says so in really, you know, nuts and bolts.
Yes.
Well done,
Thank
Michael.
You so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Michael at Holland Park West. Our final caller, and we have another question, our last question from the class of Year 6 at Durack State School for you, Professor Rolly Sussex. This is Kevin.
Hi, my name is Kevin, and I'm a Year 6 student from Durack State School.
Yes.
And my question is, where did the letters of the alphabet originate from?
Ah, all right. We've got 26. We borrowed the alphabet from the Romans, okay, who spoke Latin, and they had 23 in regular use. They didn't have a U, and they didn't have a K, and they didn't have a W. And if you think about it, double U is a bit like sort of two of those. They used the V instead of the U. So they had 23, and they got a lot of the idea for their alphabet from the Greeks, all right, and they got theirs from the Phoenicians, Phoenician, and they spoke a Semitic language, which was like Arabic and Hebrew, and that was about 2000 BC. And what was interesting about their alphabet is that they didn't write the vowels. They only write the consonants. And so, you know, bag would be just BG. And they left you to work out the vowels from the context. And sometimes that could be quite difficult. There are some modern languages like Arabic and Hebrew where you don't write all the vowels anyway, which means that you've got to take a bit of a guess at the missing vowel really is. So Phoenicians to Greeks to Romans to us. And you might ask yourself, let's say you've got a language which has got a sound that isn't in our alphabet. What do you do? And there are three possibilities. You can add an accent, you know, like a little mark on top of it or underneath or through or something like that. For example, in Czech, if you have a C, it is pronounced like TS, but if you add a little V on top of it, it's pronounced CH. Okay. Or you can double up letters. So we've done that in English. TH is TH or THE, right, which is a single sound but two letters. And the other alternative is that you invent completely new letters. And there are languages that have done that as well. But then, of course, you need something like a keyboard on your computer which can manage those. So that's a story about alphabets. The English alphabet is pretty much stuck with 26, and that's just as well because it's pretty much a nightmare anyway.
Thank you, Kevin. More questions from students next week when you will hear from pupils at Ipswich North State School. And, of course, if you think your school community would like to ask Rolly a question, then now is the time to call on 1-300-222-612 and register your interest with our producer, Robbie Minshall. So if your school has some questions for Rolly about language, call Rob now on 1-300-222-612. Professor Rolly Sussex, it's now time for your last word.
This is actually a sort of dysphemism. It comes from Stephen Fry, whom we all know, and he says, at 66, I am entering the last phase of my active physical life. My body on the move resembles in sight and sound nothing so much as a bin liner full of yogurt.
And with that visual, I will bid you a fond farewell, Professor Rolly Sussex. A pleasure and a privilege as ever. Thank you.
I'll be here next week.
On your radio and online.
At home or on the road.
This is ABC Radio.